roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is up, Junk Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for 2D here on a Thursday. Excited to be with you for the next hour. Got a fun show for you. And included in that is two guests, Ian Hinesh, UFC middleweight. He's going to join us to talk about his upcoming fight against Nasruddin Imavov, which takes place next Saturday, July 24th, here in Las Vegas. It's called UFC on ESPN 27. He'll join us at 12:20 p.m. Eastern, 9:20 a.m. Pacific. We also got Darren Elkins. He's got a fight on the same card against Derek Minner. He'll join us at 12:45 p.m. Eastern, 9:45 a.m. Pacific. And, of course, we'll cover the latest news, including the two title fights that were announced in the last couple of days here with Valentina Shevchenko. She will be meeting Lauren Murphy. I think we all kind of suspected that that would be the case. We just didn't know when it would take place. We also got Bobby Lawler versus Nick Diaz, official. In other words, bout agreements have been signed and there's no waiting on the other party or anything like that. And Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega is official as well. It's September 25th here in Las Vegas. And I believe it's UFC 2, whatever. I'll tell you in a few seconds here. I'm all the way up to December. I know there's cards in November in New York and December in Las Vegas. I just got to straighten it all out. Also, Dana White gives an update on Conor McGregor. In fact, earlier this morning, I saw Conor McGregor updating us as well on his Instagram. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Sounds like 1 year is when McGregor will be probably competing again in the octagon. Bellator 262 is on Friday. We'll go over that card. Khabib reminds us yet again he's retired, but he also did something lovely for a fan of his who came to Las Vegas wanting to take a selfie. And guess what? He obliged. He's in town, and he obliged. And I thought that was pretty cool. All right, so we'll talk about all that when we come back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, July 15th. Okay, so Goz, you're with me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought I was riding solo. All right.
I'm going to try and, if I leave, you know why.
Okay, so the cliff notes is Goz ate terrible sushi last night, or spicy sushi. He doesn't know. And he basically was the final scene of The Exorcist for the past 12 hours. We'll leave it at that. This morning he felt better. And he thought he was good to go, and then he came down and once again recreated the scene. So I told him, hey, look, I can ride solo, no big deal. But then I saw him pop up, so he's manning up. All right, Goz, did you see the update on McGregor from McGregor himself or what Dana White had to say?
I saw what Dana had to say, but I didn't see the update from Conor.
Mm-hmm. All right. So for those that don't know, Dana White basically said he'll be back in a year is what he said. And I think we all suspected that just because we've seen the timeline that we had with Anderson Silva. Not necessarily of when they'll fight. It's when they're ready to resume fighting, you know. And, there's been a few leg breaks now. Going back to Corey Hill, Anderson Silva, now Chris Weidman. And whether you hear Chris Weidman is walking around in his kitchen or driving, it's when will they be back, you know? And so the doctors, now that they're familiar with the injuries and the rehab, they suspect a year. And that's what Dana White said. Conor McGregor went a little bit further. He actually released a video, I think it was earlier this morning, and I just listened to it before the show. He starts off with sounding pleasant, you know. First of all, thank you for the shout outs for my birthday, which was yesterday, and I felt all the love. I had a great surgery. I felt rejuvenated. And then it seemed like he hit a little bit of a dip. I mean, he didn't call it depression or anything, or just, I think maybe it was just cold bucket of reality, you know, cold bucket of water in the face called reality. He can't go to the Mediterranean on a yacht. He can't go to a five-star resort with his family, you know, and do what he normally does. He's basically only has one leg right now, you know. And so he was riding around on a scooter in California, and he says, look, I accept that. I got an apartment close to my doctor because I'm going to be seeing him a lot. He went on to thank his whole team, and then he started. He started with, you can ask Dana White, you can ask Dr. Davidson, you can ask, you know, other UFC personnel. I had a stress fracture going in. I don't wear shin pads. And he made an excuse, you know. He said he thought about pulling out. They wanted him to pull out, but he realized he wasn't going to do that. But I don't know, because here's the terrible thing, is when a man speaks, usually you just want to give him the benefit of the doubt and figure, well, this man's telling the truth, you know. Dana White and Conor McGregor are two individuals where, because of their status and what they can say and how they say it and get away with saying it, they don't always have to be truthful. Now, we don't always take them serious. It's going to be a one-round knockout. Have I ever been wrong? What about the time? Oh, shut up. You know, and we don't even get to the point of when he was wrong because he has a mic and he can just say whatever he wants. And we all kind of laugh along, you know, because part of it is what we call shtick. His coach, John Kavanaugh, said that they took a look at his leg and they did a scan, but they didn't find anything, you know? So now we have opposing stories. I don't remember him saying, you know, I don't expect him to always be truthful, but usually you can tell when the fighter says, hey, look, I'm good to go, you know? And when they're presenting that, you have to take them at their word, you know, because otherwise it does sound like an excuse. And we can always fall back on, well, maybe Poirier wasn't healthy either. But you walked in the octagon, you know, you said you were ready to go, and you just lost. You just lost. And plus, I think even John Kavanaugh was the first one to say, along with Eric Nixick's mom, I don't know if you saw that post, but Eric Nixick said, my mom spotted when the injury took place. Basically, when he was checking a teep kick, you know, a few people have spotted that. I watched the fight over and over just see where the contact was. I saw that as well. I saw that occur earlier in the round, but then I kind of washed it away because he kept bouncing on it. You know, sometimes I thought he was bouncing a little gingerly after that one kick that Daniel Cormier zeroed in on, the one that came up short. But for the most part, I think it was just a buildup from some of those checks, but with the elbow. And then eventually, man, it just gave, you know. And so I don't know. I love his positivity. You should be positive. But you would have thought he would have won by the end of that video. Like, he was the actual winning party, you know. And, again, how's this going to work? You know, I don't know. There was no apology, by the way, towards, you know, the way he acted or the things he said. It's only been a few days. He did say he's been in a lot of pain. So, you know, there was moments where you could tell he was being totally genuine, totally forthright, totally realistic, and then he just kind of goes on these little two-minute tangents. It's about an eight-minute video. It's available on his Instagram. I'm sure we'll have it on Junkie as well.
I think if he would have won the fight, he would have wanted praise and would have gotten praise. So he made the decision to get in there, whether it's truthful or not. But if you watch the fight, I don't know that a lot of people are saying, well, it was a really close fight up until that moment. You know, I just feel like he's probably going to lose that fight regardless. Because Dustin Poirier, I think now over the last two fights, has shown that he has more weapons and more ways to win that fight. And if they fought again, I picked Conor this last time. I'd probably pick Dustin this time for that very reason. So I don't even really know that anything he's saying really holds much to it.
You know, then he zeroed in on those elbows from the bottom and how dangerous they were. And look, yeah, of course they don't feel good. You know, I don't go in when I'm getting a massage and at some point go, hey, at some point, can you throw elbows? You know, those feel good. No, I'm not. I'm not of that opinion. I know that they hurt, but I think he would trade those in for the ones Poirier was landing from up top. You know what I mean? And from having just the position alone, even if they weren't that active, that was a 10-9 round. In fact, two judges gave it a 10-8. Like, literally, it, you know, maybe that was a move to – if you could do that, somehow the guy on top protects himself or just does anything to throw his balance off, and then you can maybe get your leg on his hip, push off, and get up, then the technique, in my opinion, is valid. But to think that that technique's either going to win you a round or get you a KO, it's not going to happen. You know, it's going to be extremely rare. Can you find me one in the history of MMA? Probably. But are you really going to do – yeah, you might get a cut, but I just don't – I don't know that that's a position I want to be in too long, you know, is on the bottom. Especially because the last stand-up exchange that they had went in Dustin's favor as well. So – I don't know. I'll give him a chance. I'll give him a chance for the pain meds to wear off a little bit more. I went through something pretty serious in 2017. I probably wasn't, like, right until I had my first shower. It took about 7 to 10 days before I could actually go in there and just have my first shower. I think after that, I sound like Israel Adesanya. After then goes, I felt, like, a little bit different because basically I was just stuck in bed, you know. I was stuck in bed and you know, and I don't remember taking pain medication, the real heavy stuff, for too long because I didn't want to get hooked on it. But I would say I probably wasn't myself for about, I think it was the 7th day. Finally, I could go in there and I was able to take a shower. I think I had to get the stitches off. I can't remember. But so I feel like maybe in a week, if he talks, I'll listen a little bit more closely. But right now, I don't know. There was points in that video where I was like, yeah, that's great. You know, I mean, we want you to get healthy. We hope you fight again. Hopefully what Dana White says is true in a year. That would mean International Fight Week of 2022. I could see that happening. But otherwise, it's like, I don't know.
Why not get ahead of it, though? And, I mean, you know that when you come back or whatever, when you do these shows, people are going to ask you those questions. This is going to be one of the first questions they ask. Why not get ahead of it and just have a stance on it? No, because right now he just kind of seems like bitter and like a dick, to be honest, the things that he said. So you can't just do that. You have to have some kind of reason behind it. And he hasn't really given us a reason other than he's Conor McGregor.
Yeah. It must sting, man. I saw a quote from Faraz Zahabi, and I've been trying to scramble to find it, but basically – he said something along the line of, he's just so narcissistic that at that moment when he was laying there in the cage, he was probably full of rage and jealousy of where Dustin Poirier was. And I was standing in the middle of the octagon with his hand raised, getting interviewed by Joe Rogan, getting talked about how he's going to be fighting for the title. That all should have been McGregor. And he was seething as he was sitting there. And unlike other times when he's lost, and we've given him so much praise. Did you see the way McGregor handled that loss? This guy's going to come back strong because he's already putting in a rearview mirror. He's already beat the mental game as well, you know, in terms of, can I beat you with it? Yep. Well, heck, now when he loses, he's actually way ahead of the pack in terms of, you know, rebuilding, rehabbing himself, and just shaking off a loss. He gave him that praise. What happened to that guy? You know, like, what literally changed in 6 months? I mean, I just don't get it, man.
Bras is 100% honest. I think that's very true. I think he was seething. I think he was seething at the press conference when he didn't get the first question, when he had to sit there and wait. Is this a person that's just not used to doing those things? He's used to being the star, used to being in the limelight. So any second that's taken away from him for even a second, I think he just doesn't know how to react to it. Think about celebrities and the way they are, man. Like very few people have people around them that tell them the truth. You know, that suit looks stupid. Or, what you said was dumb. People don't do that because they don't want to get kicked out of those circles. So after a while, you get used to that. And when somebody tells you no, it's just a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we can talk about this for days, but I do want to discuss a few other things happening in our sport. What do you think of Shevchenko versus Murphy, Lauren Murphy, and Ortega versus Volkanovski? Well, we know that one's done. We now have a date, September 25th. But those two goes are on the same card as Diaz versus Lawler 2. What do you think of that card, that 1-2-3 punch? That was one hell of an announcement, man.
Yeah, it was a good one. I mean, with Valentina, I think it was to be expected. Yeah. I think it's the right decision. The problem is Valentina is just so destructive. You know, like you look at the matchup and you go, everybody's got a shot, but realistically, anybody who breaks this down, Valentina's just better at everything. You know, really, there's only one girl I think that you can put in front of her. And even then, you can argue cases that she could win that fight, and it's Amanda Nunes. So it's just one of those fights where she's defending her title. It's a title shot. But I don't feel like she's really going to be threatened at all in that fight. And then the rematch after so many years, that's just crazy, you know, that we get to see that fight again. Anytime you hear Nick Diaz, you always sit there for a second and go, did he mean Nate? Like, that's how long it's been, right? And now it's finally going to happen. But, you know, I don't want to be a pessimist, but for me, it's like, it's hard for me to get excited for that fight until we get really close, because there's a lot of hurdles that even when a younger Nick Diaz, when he was younger, when he was healthier, when he was in his prime, he couldn't even get through those hurdles then. So now, after all these years being put back in that situation, let's see how he handles it. But if it does go off, it'll be a fun fight. But Robbie Lawler's an active fighter. You know, his career went in a different direction after that first fight. So skill-wise, you would imagine this should be Robbie Lawler all day, considering Nick Diaz hasn't fought in a while. He's gotten older. Who knows how much he's trained? We don't know that. But the one thing you can say about the Diaz brothers is they're just cut from a different cloth, and they can't be taken lightly. But again, if you were to break down skill versus skill, I don't see how you're not calling Robbie Lawler on that one. And then the last one, the title fight, like the Ultimate Fighter has actually gotten me more excited for that fight. Seeing them take shots at each other and seeing a little bit more fire out of Volkanovski's fun. So that's actually done a good job to promote this fight in my eyes.
Yeah. And here's another thing I liked is I got the announcement, to me at least, all at one time. And if I'm Joe Lunchpail, the consumer, the casual MMA fan, and I see something like that come across Junkie, you know, my Junkie feed on Twitter or wherever, you know, it just lands on my lap and I see it, I really just say, oh man, I'm grabbing tickets. I love that type of announcement when they can give you the top three fights all at once. I don't know. I mean, for me, it caused me to go to my group text threads with my friends and, you know, kind of like pass on the announcement and talk about, you know, hey, are you guys coming to town? What do you think of this card? It caused chatter. And that's something I really, really liked when you have that type of a buzz over an announcement. I think the UFC should do more of that. I've said in the past that the UFC, I believe, misses a golden opportunity to do something they used to do a long time ago, and that's in the middle of a pay-per-view or even one of those big ABC cards or Fox back in the day. I think they could drop some fight cards then and actually do it by presenting fighters that are going to take place. Maybe you don't need to have them face off, but maybe just show them side by side. I don't know. They do some of that a little bit from time to time, but sometimes you'll think back and go, well, it's 5 years since Megan Levy or, you know, John Annex stood between the two participants of an upcoming fight. I remember Chael and John Jones did it, you know, so there's a bunch of those. And I don't watch every second of every pay-per-view because sometimes I'm making a bet. I'm drinking a beer. So maybe I miss some of those things, but I just don't. I remember in the past, they would actually lead them into the octagon at times. Maybe that was a time concern. Who knows? But now they're kind of running their own show as far as the time concern or time constraints. I really think they should do more of that because it was just a big, big bomb that got dropped, all three of those fights. And I got the rest of the card here, too. for you. It's called UFC 266. These are, I'm going to call the rest of them rumor stages, but I'm pretty sure that they're good to go. But I'm hearing Jessica Andrade versus Cynthia Calvillo, Marlon Moraes versus Marab Davilashvili, Curtis Blaydes versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Tatiana Suarez versus Roxanne Modafferi. So that, along with Volkanovski, Ortega, Shevchenko, Murphy, Diaz, Lawler, that, my friend, is a solid UFC pay-per-view. Here's my 70.
Yeah. Did you see ESPN Plus is going to go up, by the way? It's not just going to be 70 now? The not the pay-per-view price, but ESPN Plus price is going
to
go up.
From $4.99 to $6, I think. They said a buck. So from $5 to $6.
Something like that. Yeah, that's not bad.
I can take that. I can take that. So, yeah, that was a big announcement. And then Habib, he had an interesting moment. So a lady from Colombia who lives in Lancaster, California now, she shows up on my tweet on, I think it was a Twitter feed or something. And it was just a lady holding up a sign that said, Habib, I want to take a selfie with you, a photo with you, or something like that. She must have known that he was in town to corner Islam Makhachev. And she must have also seen the interview with John Morgan, you know, where he basically, I think, at some point states he's in Vegas. John Morgan caught up with Ali Abdelaziz, Islam Makhachev, and Khabib Nurmagomedov in Vegas. She must have seen that. But she goes to the UFC Apex. Dana White comes down, says, I'm going to make it happen. And sure enough, a few hours later, she got that selfie with Khabib Nurmagomedov. It looked like he was back at his manager's house. So good for her, man. Like, she went for it and she got it, you know, and Habib was a willing participant and the UFC made it happen. I thought that was awesome.
That was very cool. Yeah, I was excited to see that.
Yeah. All right, we're ready for our first guest and we'll be back with Ian Heinsch, UFC middleweight. All right, I want to welcome to the show Ian Heinsch, who is going to be fighting Nasruddin Umarov on July 24th at UFC on ESPN 27. How you doing, Ian? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio.
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Are you still in Florida, or are you in, have you already made your way to Vegas?
No, man, I'm still in Florida. I leave for Vegas on the 20th, next Tuesday, and just, you know, get my last bit of training in, get my weight down, and get my things together and get ready to head out.
A few years ago, I saw you training at Extreme Couture and then for a while in Colorado. But it looks like Florida is now permanent home. I saw you purchased a new home as well.
Yeah, you know, ever since before the corona, I was planning on moving to Thailand. I trained out there for a few months and just fell in love with the culture and the training out there. And obviously, the price, the cost of living, I could really live like a professional athlete out there, and it was amazing. But unfortunately, when the corona hit, they shut the borders down. You know, things changed, man. So I was looking for a home. I love Vegas, but, you know, the hurricane needs water, man. I love being by the beach, the ocean, the amazing culture down here at Sanford MMA, and the coaching and the teammates that I have down here just it's been amazing.
Did Hurricane Ian get a chance to meet Hurricane Elsa a few weeks ago?
I think I scared her off, man. No, we didn't catch much of that. I still,
Good.
Yeah, it was just a little bit of rain. It was nothing crazy. I think it hit the other side of Florida.
Yeah. And I guess just because I'm curious, you said you really love being around the water. Is that a thing, or is that just where you grew up?
No, it's always drawn me to the ocean. And I would say it kind of, you know, I feel grounded. I feel close to God by the ocean, and I'm able to go fishing all the time. And I love fishing, man. And so in between training, I'm out there fishing.
Now, do you go to like lakes and streams, or do you go into the ocean?
No, on the ocean, deep sea.
Oh, wow. Take any of your MMA buddies, or is this like another crew you hang out with?
No, I take some of my MMA buddies, for sure. Angla, the ONE FC, former middleweight champ. He comes fishing with me. Kyle Noble, he's fighting in Titan coming up. And, yeah, a few of the guys come out fishing with me. Or I just go solo, man. I love fishing.
Yeah. And you have your own boat?
No, I don't. I go out on a little reef boat around here, take us out reef fishing. I got a friend who sometimes takes me out deep sea fishing. My buddy Kyle, who's on my team, leaves his bass boat here. We go down the canals and that and go fishing. So, yeah, man, we got a good setup down here. Someday, though, get this bonus and I'll be buying a boat.
I was just about to say that. If you could rack up a bonus in 10 days, would a boat be something that you take a strong look at?
Yeah, absolutely. You said that right. A real strong look at, and just kind of see if it's something that I need right now. Obviously, I'd love it, but, you know, we got to plan accordingly. And is it still 75G bonuses? Does anyone know?
50.
Back to 50.
Yeah.
Okay.
The fighters seem to be able to talk Dana White into it when they have the fighter meeting, you know, after the weigh-ins, the ceremonial weigh-ins. They've been able to do it. I think Chloe Ferguson got to him at, I think it was one of the shows in Houston, yeah, kind of like, hey, yeah, we're back. You pulled up quick. Come on, let's get things going. And then this weekend, because it was just a massive pay-per-view. So, you know, I think it's worth a try to just give it a shot. Hey, if you can't do 75, how about 60? And if a few fighters speak after you do, man, sometimes you'll just pull the trigger, so go for it.
Yeah, definitely. That's something probably I'm going to do. I'll let you know.
Ian, you got a name for the boat yet? If you were to get it, you got to name it, right?
Yeah, you do have to name it, but I feel like it's something you got to see it and you got to just feel that. It's just got to come to you, and if you don't know what kind of boat you're going to get, you don't really know what the name is yet.
Mhm. Now, so let's talk a little bit about your opponent here. If you were to look up and down his record and look up and down your record, he's successful and he's had some wins, but I'm not so sure that we can compare the caliber of opponents that you've had to the caliber that he's had. How do you assess your opponent and his strengths?
You know, I feel like I overassessed Kelvin Gastelum in my last fight, you know, really looking. Obviously, I was a fan first off, and then watching him fight, you know, Israel and almost take him out and, you know, put it on him like he did. I feel like I looked into that too much and was so focused on the striking and kind of left myself open for the wrestling. And so, to be honest with you, man, I really don't even know how to say his name. I know he fought Phil Hawes. It's the only fight I've watched. He's my teammate. He's given me some pointers, but honestly, I haven't looked at his record. My coaches have trained me on some things that he does, but honestly, this whole camp has just been about, hey man, be the best version of you. There's so many bodies at Samford. If I can adjust to any fighter, because a good fighter is going to come out different every fight, so you can't really train for the old him. So you just want to be that fighter that can make those adjustments in the fight, no matter how that fighter comes out. If he wants to wrestle all of a sudden, or now he's wanting to strike, now he's wanting to hop around like some karate kid, you know, you can make these adjustments. So I've just been training with so many diverse people, like Raymond Daniels when he's coming in, you know, Anthony Rumble Johnson, Gregory, who's just newly in the UFC, and mostly tall guys, you know, so I'm getting that type of look. But Jason Jackson with Bellator, just these guys have been able to push me and make me the best version of me. And I believe if I go in there and just fight him and not fight me and him, because that's kind of what I was doing before. I felt like I was, you know, not just fighting my opponent. I was fighting myself as well. I just want to fight my opponent this fight. I want to be the best me. I want to have an active year. But I got a big challenge in front of me, and I look to destroy this man on the 24th.
Ian, do you watch a lot of television?
Not really.
Do you know a show called Sons of Anarchy?
Yes, I do. My wife loves that show.
So on that show, they have their core group, and then they have these guys that are called Nomads. That still pertain to the group, to the club, but they go to different places, and they're allowed to do that. For a while, you would go to different gyms, and I would always think of you as like that Nomad guy, right?
Yeah.
But then I started thinking about it. I only thought about this morning. The gym that you're at now, some of these gyms are so big and so massive. I think one of the benefits of being a nomad is you get these different looks, right? They keep you sharp. But your gym is so big and has so many people coming in and out that I almost feel like you might get that same feeling at a big gym as well, because there's so many new bodies coming in and leaving. Is that true? Do you feel that way? Do you miss seeing different bodies?
No, man. You know, with this gym, I mean, it's unreal, man. Last time I did an interview, the guy asked me, hey, man, who have you been training with? And I literally had to go through my pictures because it's like there's so many names from like Rory McDonald, Nate the Great Markhor. I try to train with everyone at the gym. And then when it's closer to fight time, I know who's going to push me. Like Phil Hawes. I even been training with Brendan Allen a lot, who a guy I was supposed to fight. And you know, we were throwing down hard when we first, and now we've kind of earned that respect, and we're cool now. We're fighting on the same card, but there's just so many bodies in that gym, and so many people that come in, and it's not. I wouldn't say it's a revolving door gym, like kind of like Tiger, where you know, camps come in different time. They try to keep it a little bit more close niche, like a family. It's the culture there. But, for example, when Gilbert Burns is getting ready to fight Wonderboy, he brings in Raymond Daniels. Now, I took advantage of that, man, because my guy kind of hops around a little bit karate style. So I said, hey, Raymond, you know, like, what do you do when a guy does this? And just the knowledge of the game that guy has. Like, Tyrone Spong, I love to just try to get these guys and have a 5-10-minute conversation just about the mentality, the mind game of this whole sport, because I truly believe – that's the one thing I'm missing. And Tyrone Spong told me so perfectly. Talent, hard work, and just athleticism can get you so far. But the top 10 guys, they use another weapon that most guys don't use, and they use their mind. And that really resonated with me because, yeah, you can train your cross 1-2, 1-2, and just have such good muscle memory. But it's about making those decisions on the fly and setting someone up for something big and putting someone in a trap where they're going to get caught, where it really is your mentality, how you go in and being calm, being smart, but being vicious and aggressive. It's such a parallel weird thing that you really have. It takes a lifetime to master. So I look towards these veterans, like a guy like Tyrone Spong, who's got over 100 fights, and just soak in that knowledge like a sponge. And Rory McDonald has really helped me out a lot, just with mentality and just technique. And so, man, I'm just taking it in. I haven't even utilized everything at Sanford MMA, and I've been here 6 months, and it's just every day is more. And that's why I bought a house here. I'll be here for a little while for sure, probably the rest of my career.
How long did it take you to feel like you were a part of the team?
Man, it was pretty crazy. It was like I came down here for 1 month just to try it out, and almost immediately, man, it wasn't like the teammates really just took me in, and the coaches examined me for like a month, like without even really talking, like teaching me anything. And then when they really, I liked how they did it, because most coaches will give you bits and pieces right away, you know, like, you know, try to sell you in the beginning. But these guys really examined me and really, truly, figured out what I needed, and the coaching's been phenomenal, and the culture's insane. I mean, like I feel like other gyms haven't reached the highest level, some other gyms, so everyone's trying to step on you to get a little bit higher. They want you to do good, but not better than them. But at Sanford MMA, I feel like the highest level's been reached in every single promotion, so everyone is just trying to elevate you to get to that level. Everyone is giving you positive, you know, sometimes it's more just like the shit talking, but here it's more like, hey, I'm just trying to motivate you, man. I want to see you go far, and I truly believe people want to see me do good.
One last question. You said you get to train with almost everybody, but two weight classes below a good friend of ours, Michael Chandler. Have you ever been able to pick his brain or move around with him, or do they try and keep some of the heavier weight classes, you know, with those guys, and the lighter weight classes with those guys?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I trained with him per se. I trained next to him, and I've definitely picked his brain. And just and just watched him. Like, you watch how these champions move. You watch their mentality they bring every day. It's like, man, it's hard to bring that mentality every single day to the gym, but they do it, man. And I just watch how they switch modes every day. And just knowing that's something I have to do. Like, a smaller guy that I've trained with actually quite a bit, and he used to be my coach at Tigers, is Rafael. He's fighting Bobby Green coming up. They couldn't get the guy a fight to save his life. He's so technical and just he has fun when he's doing it. And but yeah, there's so many different champions at all weight classes, and I just examine them. If either I'm training with them, or I'm picking their brain, or I'm just watching how they move and how they operate on a daily basis, because you know, they're competing at the highest level and winning. So those are the guys I need to watch.
Yeah, Rafael Fiziev, that's the guy that's mixing in with Bobby coming up. All right, good stuff, man. Sounds like you got a lot of killers over there. Yeah. And it sounds like you've settled in nicely. So it's great to catch up with you. Good luck with the rest of the camp. Probably just a few hard practices, then you got that weight cut, and then it's time to shine on July 24th against Nasruddin Imambov. Good luck, you know, and we'll see you in Vegas in a couple weeks.
Thank you, guys. See you there.
All right, take care. We'll see you. All right, folks, there you have it. Ian Heinisch, who's a UFC middleweight, and he's fighting Nasruddin Imambov. That is not an easy name to pronounce, by the way. Some of these Eastern European guys, they just try, goes. I'm starting to do what John Anik does, you know, just pronounce the name over and over and over and over until it just flies off your tongue. Well, that was cool to hear, you know, what he's talking about, where that gym just focuses a lot on not just the X's and O's, the physicality part, but zeroing in on being, you know, strong up here. And then he threw out some names that have worn some major belts, you know, or competed for some major belts. I've also heard that that gym is very special in terms of everything's in-house. So you do a lot of rehab there. You do a lot of, like, your decompression, like, so massages and cryotherapy. And it is, like, a one-stop massive type of gym. And I keep hearing from other people that it's blowing up, is what I'm trying to say.
It sounded like a nightmare to me when he said Raymond Daniels, Tyron Spong, and Anthony Johnson. What kind of rounds are these, dude? That's horrible. Like, the fight's going to be fun. It's going to be a day off compared to having to face off against guys like that.
AJ's a beast, bro. AJ's a beast. There's no way around it. Looks like Rory McDonald settled down there, too. Because I heard of a – I think next week they're having a PFL media day with Rory at Stanford and Kayla at ATT. So I thought maybe Rory was just spending time at Stanford because the next few fights are going to be in Stanford. But I think some of the Canadian fighters had to relocate is what happened because of the pandemic. And so some of them have either maybe moved to a permanent home or an extended stay. I think that's where Rory's doing it at Stanford. He's been there a while.
I mean, that's kind of what happened with hockey season and why – I don't know if a lot of people know, but in hockey – the regular schedule that they have, they didn't have it. They just kind of separated everybody. And you would play like the same 8 or 9 teams all year. But it was mostly because the Canadian teams couldn't come across the border and we couldn't go that way. So, yeah, it kind of relocated a lot of people.
When you asked him about the boat and the name of the boat, what if he said, tell you what, it's your lucky day. You name it right now.
Well, I would have told him, you know what? Huh?
Would you have said goes or gozy?
No, because it's got to be a female name, right? I think it's bad luck to name a boat. It's got to be a female name. So what I was going to say was, why don't you name it Dana? That could be male or female. And just say, hey, how about them 50 Gs? I'll even name my boat after you.
True. And Dana's got a good sense of humor when it comes to that. They teased him about that. I've seen on interviews. And he just goes, yeah, I got stuck with a girl name. But, you know, I didn't know that about the female name. Makes sense. But I remember Tony Soprano had a boat and he called it Stu Potts. I don't think that's female. So maybe it was just – maybe there are certain rules to it. I don't know. I'll have to find out from what friends do I have that are kind of nautical and might know? I have to think about that, follow up on that and see. But I'm not calling you a liar by any chance. I just want to look into that and see what the rules are. I don't know that I'll ever own a boat, but I'm just curious. Darren Elkins will join us in about 5 minutes. Continuing on here with what we were talking about earlier, did you have a reaction, I guess, to Khabib, not just, you know, meeting up with a lady and making her day, but yet again, he reiterated, I'm not fighting. He confirmed that GSP was offered to him. Dana White came clean and said, I wasn't supposed to bug him, but I decided to bug him. You know me. I presented that fight to him, and he wasn't interested. Now, after hearing Khabib yet again say he's retired, what are your thoughts on that? And I guess I'll ask you one more time. Do you think it'll stick?
I don't think it'll stick, but I think it'll stick for a while. I think maybe when you don't do something you love for a long time, I think it just starts to really hit you. So in his head, I think it makes sense now, and I respect him for doing it. And he went out on top. How many times do we complain later on in people's careers? Like, when's this guy going to go away? You know, like, you're damaging your legacy. He did it right. But I think if Dustin Poirier can continue to win, if Charles Oliveira stays the man, if Michael Chandler has a resurgence, maybe that might draw him back out. I don't know. But I really don't feel like it's money that's going to do it.
Well, I commented on the thread. So MMA Junkie's got an Instagram page. It's Instagram.com/MMAJunkie.com spelled out. And when I saw, you know, us post about that, I made a comment. I think he's retired, but for sure, if he were to come out of retirement, it wouldn't be sooner than the year 2023. Now we're halfway through 2021. He just seems focused on, you know, he'll be in Makachev's corner and just maybe guiding the younger guys on his team. I bet you he's still mourning the loss of his father. And I think it's still fresh that, I mean, it hasn't even been a year since he beat Justin Gaethje. It was October of 2020. So, you know, a lot of fighters will go that long without even competing. So I don't even think those juices are flowing yet, you know? Plus, if there was one guy that was really going to draw him out, I thought it would be Conor with his antics. And right now, Conor is out. I mean, he's out with the injury, but his stock is just cold right now. It's down, I guess. But another fighter that could possibly draw him out would be, I thought, Oliveira, only because he hadn't faced Oliveira. And Oliveira does have a different type of a body frame and a different type of skill set than some of the fighters he faced. Because the last three he faced were Poirier, Gaethje, and Conor, all guys that love to strike first. So Khabib, you know, had clear pathways there in terms of not to blast his striking, but his striking is not his bread and butter, his wrestling is. So he had paths there where he knew, okay, look, I'm going to go where they're weak and, you know, mess them up, and he did. So now Oliveira also, I guess, has that, you know, where, hey, I like to strike. I'm a jiu-jitsu whiz. I like to strike. But, you know, he out-wrestled Tony Ferguson. I mean, I remember him picking up and putting Tony Ferguson down a few times. So I don't want to call him a wrestler yet, but I think he's just somebody who's clicking, like, you know, with all of the different attributes, all the different skills that a championship fighter can bring to the table. So I don't know. But more than anything, he just hasn't faced them, you know. So maybe if Oliveira were to go through a few guys, maybe he could draw him out. Plus, now I'm convinced that it doesn't take heat to draw out Khabib. It can just be respectful competition versus someone he likes. I thought Chandler maybe had a chance too, you know, because he hadn't faced Chandler, and but, you know, Chandler lost to Oliveira. So that's why I say 2023, because 2021, I just consider it, don't even talk to Khabib. He's not going to answer that question. You know, he's not even going to give it a thought. 2022 is when he might start to think about it. By the time a few cycles have happened with the champion defending, or maybe there's a new champ or whatever, I think maybe then, you know, maybe the hurt from the loss of his father will be a little bit less. Maybe his mom will have a different opinion. I don't know. Whatever it is that's keeping him from wanting to compete, maybe he'll just have some sort of a calling. And and we would see something in 2023. I would be shocked if I saw him in 2022 or 2021, but I'd be shocked if I never saw him again too.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. If he came back soon, I would be shocked. But if I never saw him fight again, I would also be shocked. So, yeah, maybe 2023, maybe late 2022, I could see something like that. But the right things have to happen. And that, I think, it's Charles Oliveira continuing to win. And then on top of that, maybe some sort of resurgence from Michael Chandler.
Yeah. I said this before when it came to McGregor, how can we get through to him? And I said, you know, it's going to take somebody, probably a combat sports legend, who's kind of done the same stuff as he has. Maybe an athlete from another sport. Maybe McGregor can relate to them. But I think it's easier to say combat sports legend. I pointed towards maybe Mike Tyson could converse with him, you know, and get him to take a good look in the mirror. As far as for Khabib, I think someone like Fedor, you know. And I think at some point he'll cross paths with Fedor, maybe at a Bellator show, or maybe, you know, in Russia somewhere. Maybe a conversation with somebody like him, or maybe one of their great wrestlers from the Olympic days. You know, and maybe they can say something that'll just cause him to think and react. And, you know, and if he stays retired, hey, it's one hell of a career. You know, he has nothing to prove. Let's get to our next guest. He's ready to go. We've been talking to this guy for well over a decade, pre and post fight. Within many of the 20-plus fights that he's had in the UFC. Shit, I should have counted him, man. Maybe he might even be closer to 30 now than 20. But Darren Elkins has done it all, and he's going to be facing Derek Minner at UFC on ESPN 27 on the same card as Ian Hynes and Nuruddin Imavov. So that's July 24th, a week from this Saturday. Yeah, that's headlined by TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen. We'll be right back. What's going on, Darren? How are you?
I'm good, man. How are yourself?
Good. Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. Great to have you, man.
Yeah, no problem. I like being here.
Hey, so let me ask you a really corny question to start things off.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a chewy?
No, I haven't done a chewy, but I would think about doing a chewy, but I wouldn't want the spit and the hot sauce and all the other stuff in there. You know what I mean? Like I'm not that guy. Like I would maybe do a chewy, and it has to be like a decently clean chew, but I'm not gonna have a bunch of people spit in there and put hot sauce and all. I'm not that disgusting, but I mean, hey.
I hear you. So Goz did a shoey on Saturday, and I'm kind of jealous that he's done one and I haven't done one. I swore I would never do one, but he did one that was so seamless that, I don't know, how can I let my little brother one-up me, you know? Now, that's not to say I'm going to do one anytime soon, but it just occurred to me, and I was wondering because I've seen these videos of shoeys going around. So you're in, but you got certain rules is what you're saying.
Yeah, certain rules. I don't. I just won't grab a shoe from a random person and drink it. Let's put it that way. I'd have to see it poured in there myself and drink it. You know.
It's your own shoe. I think if I could play it off and say, "Hey, look what I," you know, somebody just handed it to me, but really it's my buddy handing me my own shoe. I think I could play that off.
Like I'd be okay with that. Like drinking out of my own shoe because at least it's my feet. But some random person's feet I'm drinking out of is it's a little different, you know.
If you had to avoid a teammate from your gym, a shoey from what, pick one shoe that you just would absolutely not in your gym, who would that fighter be?
Let's say trainer, my boxing coach Joey. He has nasty feet. He always talks about it. He never takes off his socks or anything. So no shoey from Joey.
I love it. All right. So listen, man, like, this is not your first rodeo. What gets you motivated to get up and train hard and get prepared knowing that the other guy wants to hurt you as bad as you want to hurt them? Now you've been able to stack some paper, you know, and create a career for yourself, provide a home for your family. You fought some of the best in the world. You've had your win streaks, you know, like, you've been through a lot. So nowadays, what is it that still motivates you to grind?
I just love to compete, man. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm doing what I like to do, what I love to do. You know, I have other things I could be doing. I'm a union pipe fitter, so I have other things, other careers I can go into. But I like the, you know, the lifestyle of fighting. I like the training part of it, and you know, just I like to see how I compete with these guys still. You know, I wake up every day and I know these guys are improving, so I have to improve too. I have to change some of my training tactics and keep trying to get better. And that kind of motivates me too, is because you watch the game, man, from 11 years ago when I first got into it, it's totally different. You know, these guys are better athletes. There's way more science behind it. So, I mean, I'm just trying to get involved as much as I can with the science.
Mm-hmm. And what is your, like, your, to me, your finest moment that I can remember is the Bektik fight.
Yeah.
I want to compare to what I when I want to say to gambling. So I had, when I lived in Southern California, I would come with my buddies to Vegas a lot, and there was one trip where I won $10,000.
Nice.
It ruined me, because future trips, if I was only up 5,000, my buddies would go like, hey, you're winning, let's go. No, man, I wanted to either get to 10 or 12 and push it, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like a loser almost when I was at 5, and then I would lose $3,000, and I'm still up 2. I should go home happy with $2,000, and I'd be actually mad that I didn't listen at 5. And knowing that at that point, I was really mad that I hadn't gotten to 10. So that's my question to you is, do you chase moments like that feeling you had after the Bektik win, and can you still get those from just, you know, other types of wins? Like, and what is it? What's that moment that you chase nowadays?
I mean, I'm just trying to keep winning, man. I mean, I had, you know, the 4-fight losing streak, and you know, I came off. I finally won one. Yeah, I definitely chase those moments, but I don't want to force those moments. Those moments just happen from, you know, countless hours of training. So if it happens, it happens. But I just, you know, go in there and try to do what I do, what I've trained to do, and that's to win. And if it happens, hell yeah, dude. It's, you know, it's going to be an awesome experience. You know, I've had a few of those really good fights like that. But, you know, sometimes you don't have the exact fight that you want. You got to expect that.
Darren, on that same note, is it difficult as a pro fighter balancing, you know, the love for the sport, the love for what you're doing versus the pressures of having to win and staying in the UFC, all that stuff? Have you found kind of like a medium for that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, that's every fight we put a lot online. You know, it's half our money if we don't win. You know, it's like, you know, they tell you only as good as your last fight. So you gotta be there, you gotta perform. And there's a lot of pressure on it. And, for me, what I've been doing kind of lately is I just, you know, I watch some of these fights, but I used to watch every, you know, UFC. There's so many of them now. I just watch, you know, some of my teammates fight. I try to step away from it when I'm not training and do other things with my family and keep my mind off of other stuff, not only fighting like I used to be. And that helps me with, you know, the stress and stuff like that. Because watching fighters these days, man, I mean, that stresses me out. You know, you feel the moment. You think about the moment. You see the guys losing. You're like, oh, man, I hate feeling like that. Or, you know what I mean? You see a guy, you know, he's down. And you're like, man, I've been there. You know what it feels like. So it stresses me out a little bit, even though I don't even know some of these guys.
You know, after everything you've been through in your career, looking at this matchup in particular, like, overall, when you get an opponent, is there much studying that has to go into it? Like, it seems like you've kind of seen it all. You've seen every type of style come at you. How much of it is preparing for your opponent versus making sure you're ready as well?
I feel like there's always, you got to watch the film, and there's always a few things that no matter what, they're going to do over and over and over in a fight. So I want to get those down. They're going to throw new things at you. They're going to add little things in the game plan, but there's always a few combos, maybe a few submissions like this guy has, a guillotine and stuff like that, that you got to really know, and you got to work on the defenses on, make sure it's on point. But other than that, it's just, you know, do what I do.
I know you're focused on your opponent, but you've been doing it for so long, and I feel like you get to a position where Darren Elkins should have some kind of credit where he could say, I've always wanted to fight blank. You guys make that happen in my next fight. Is there like a name or somebody that's maybe eluded you throughout the years?
Man, I can't really say. I mean, I fought most of the guys I wanted to fight. You know, they don't a lot of guys. I fought a lot of guys in the rosters. There's a lot of new guys, though. That's exciting about all these new, you know, the new guys in the top 10 and stuff, top 15. And I'm just trying to work my way back there, man. You know, I got a while to get there, but I'd like to just get back in the top 15 and whatever opponents that one by one they get me there, that's what I want to do.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, this will be your third fight still without fans, because even though you fought in Florida, I think it was the first batch of fights that had no fans when the pandemic hit us and the UFC made its return. Is that kind of sucking and getting old? Like, you know, because like last week Vegas was popping with the pay-per-view, but how do you feel about that?
Man, I wish there was fans. I mean, I feed off the crowd. I like having the crowd, the energy. It makes the week that much more fun. When it's like this, it's okay. It's like a sparring session, it feels like. You can hear every punch. You can hear every elbow. You can hear your coach. You can hear their coach. So, you know, there's benefits of it. You can hear everything your coach says, but you can hear everything their coach says, too. So you can kind of plan off of that, too. So, but, yeah, I miss the fans. And watching the fights last week, I was like, man, that'd be really nice to have a big stadium of fans again.
Who is the head coach now? Like, who actually runs the show at Team Alpha Male? Is it Castillo?
No, there is no head coach. They do, you know, we talk about it, they split up the time. So there's a lot of, like, you know, Danny does a lot. He does only privates now with his certain fighters that want to work with him. And then we have Chris Holdsworth, who I work with. You know, I've always had Danny and Chris in my corner. And now I'm working with Joey the last. This is my third fight, Joey Rodriguez. This is my third fight with him. And, but, you know, Faber does a lot of practices. Mike Malott, Chris Holdsworth. I know Raya Faber does a lot of practices. So it's not really a single head coach or all kind of head coaches they consider it.
Okay. Yeah, I remember hearing something like that. It just had been a while since I asked the question. So I didn't know if they had created a hierarchy. So what that means is if you say, guys, I'm fighting on the 24th, you're with whatever coach is available out of those. I mean, if all of them can make it, great. But let's just say this one or that one can. You guys have built up this comfort level that I'm good to go with Holdsworth. I'm good to go with Rodriguez. Let's go. We're running it. No big deal.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think we all have our core people that you work with, you kind of see eye to eye with, and you just, you know, I worked, like I said, with those guys for a while now. So it's like, you know, you tell them you got a fight and they're ready to go. But you've worked with all the coaches. You've seen all their moves. They tell you all their moves, so they know what you're doing too. So it's a good blend of everything with all the coaches like that.
Last question. Last year, the Northern California area got hit hard with the fires. This happens every year, but last year was terrible. And I remember it actually became a smoke problem, a breathing problem, you know, for a lot of our friends and colleagues and the fighters we cover. This year, it seems like extreme heat is something that's hitting you guys hard. Has either one of those, I know the fires have started up again, but has it made it difficult at all for or impacted you guys at all, your breathing or just your quality of life, I guess? I don't know.
I mean, I haven't really noticed much of a difference. It's been really hot. I mean, you got to run at a certain time of days and do workouts. It's easier at certain times of day. You know, early mornings, you don't want to wait until about 2 o'clock because then it gets really hot here. It's cool in the afternoon, cool in the morning. So you can work around it. It gets cool in the afternoons and the morning, but I mean, and in the mornings and the evenings, but you don't want to do it in mid-afternoon. It's way too hot here. As far as smoke and stuff, I've seen a little bit of smoke, but not really a factor thing. So I'm sure there's going to be more fires. It's really dry right now. We're in this big drought, and everything's yellow here. So, you know, we're going to probably have another bad fire this year.
Well, let's hope that things turn around. But in the meantime, good luck with the rest of your camp. Safe travels to Vegas. See you in a couple of weeks here in Sin City. And thank you, as always, for your time, man. It's been great covering your career. Not to make it sound like it's winding up or anything, but I'm just telling you that we've done this many times. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, always a pleasure here, too. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Darren. Take care. We'll see you. Bye. All right, there you have it, folks. Darren Elkins fighting Derek Minner next Saturday, July 24th. It's UFC on ESPN 27. So it's going to be on big ESPN. It won't be like a fight night, which is on ESPN Plus and sometimes on ESPN 2. So that's great. That card has a headline bout of TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sanhagen. So I'm really liking that fight. And this weekend, the return of Misha Tate goes. Mm-hmm. She's back as well versus
Marion Renault.
Marion Renault, who's retiring. She reiterated that to us, that this is it. This is the final fight. She's in her 40s. She teaches, and it just sounds more believable, you know. God bless her, man. She's done well, you know. So they asked her about it, but she's out. But this weekend, we also have Puna Soriano versus Brendan Allen, Chris Daukaus versus Shamil Abdurakhmanov. I think I said it right. Aspen Ladd is back, goes against Macy Chasson. Macy Barber back against Miranda Maverick. Kyler Phillips versus Julian Paiva. Randy Costa goes against Adrian Yanez. Mickey Gall versus Jordan Williams. Ian Hinch versus Nasruddin Imavov. Andre Yule versus Julio Arce. Sejara Eubanks versus Elise Reed. So a lot of people kind of coming back that we haven't said their names in a while.
Yeah, fun names.
Yeah, and then Bellator is tomorrow night, folks, on Showtime. Check it out. We actually caught up with two of the co-main eventers, Matt Mitrione, Tyrell Fortune. Mitrione used to be trained by Tyrell Fortune when it came to wrestling, when Mitrione was down at the time it may have been Black Zillions, and now it's called Sanford MMA. But it was a few years ago when Fortune was the wrestling coach there. So a lot of respect between both guys. Both guys spoke highly of the other guy when we had them on this past week. The main event there is Juliana Velasquez. That's the flyweight champion for Bellator. Undefeated, she faces Denise Kielholz. And Ronnie Marks is on the card. Cody Law, Arlene Blanco are some other names you might recognize. But I can't lie to you and tell you it's the deepest card I've ever seen. It's not. And that's something I wish Bellator would change a little bit. So when I heard about all those cuts, I don't know if you saw that list this past Saturday. I wondered if it's because they just had a lot of new talent and they were just flushing out some of the older names, or if they're trying to maybe do less shows and stack them because of the pandemic. Maybe they really haven't opened up their European shows like they used to. But I just want cards that have a little bit more talent on them, name recognition, because I know that if people think like I think, you'll plop yourself on the couch, order that pizza, pop up in the beers, and invest in the 3-4 hours to see top talent fight top talent, push their way towards the top. When you don't recognize the names, you feel like, I'm going to run and get dinner, and I'm just going to come back for the last two. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's exactly what happens. Some people are even willing to forego the live and say, I'm going to go out, and just when I come back, I'll run those two fights. Boom, I'm all caught up. That's really what the mentality for a lot of MMA fans can be, and that's why I think sometimes it's better to have less shows but make them deeper and get that fan to stay home and chime in on social media and react and, you know, watch it live. I don't know. That's how I would approach it, but what do I know? Are you feeling better? You powered through this last hour. That was great.
It's catching up right now, actually.
All right, so we'll bounce. So we covered it all. Thank you to Ian Heinisch and Darren Elkins for their time. They both fight next Saturday. This Saturday, the UFC has a card as well as Bellator. So keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. I tell people all the time, get that free app that's available on all smartphones and tablets. You'll love it, and it's a great way to keep up with the sport when you're out and about. All right, folks, we will see you all next Monday. Go out there and be a champion.